Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. I'm Glenn Moberg. On Tuesday, Governor Scott Walker laid out his budget plan, which called for big cuts in aid to local school districts and cities and counties, and also cuts to the UW system that would be accompanied by a reorganization in which the flagship institution, UW-Madison, is split from the other regional universities. Governor Walker called it a necessary step to realize his dream of creating 250,000 new jobs for the state, but his critics were less enthusiastic. One of the 14 state Democratic senators who fled to Illinois said, quote, "Last week the governor declared war on the unions. This week he declared war on the people of Wisconsin." Today, Senate Republicans issued a contempt ruling and called for the arrest of the Democratic 14. They will fine them each $100 for every day they are absent. The governor says he will begin issuing layoffs tomorrow unless they return to pass his budget repair bill. And the governor says he will not compromise on the issue of collective bargaining rights for public workers. The Democrats say they aren't coming home until he does. Today we have two veteran political leaders from very different perspectives on Route 51. Former Congressman Dave Obey, a Democrat who represented Wisconsin's 7th District for more than 40 years, and returning for a second week, veteran Republican activist Bob Williams of Idea Associates in Stevens Point, a former aide to Republican governor and UWSP chancellor, Lee Dreyfus. We've got a lot of ground to cover, and we want you to help us. Give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. This is your show, after all, and we will try to make room for as many of your opinions as we can get on the air. And I should make clear, as a Wisconsin public radio reporter, I am a state of Wisconsin public employee. I am not a union member, and I would be affected by the proposed changes to health and pension benefit payments. Also, as a University of Wisconsin Extension employee, I could also potentially be affected by a decision to split UW-Madison from the rest of the UW system. So now that the disclaimers are out of the way, Dave Obey and Bob Williams, thanks so much for joining us today.
Glad to be here.
Glad to be with you.
And gentlemen, I think before we get started, I'm going to play a short clip from the governor's budget address on Tuesday. This is the governor speaking to the assembly and the senators that were there, mostly from his own party, Tuesday in the state capitol.
I campaigned on creating an environment where the private sector can create 250,000 jobs over the next 4 years. Our budget lays that foundation by freeing taxpayers to create jobs in the private sector, by limiting the size and scope of government, and by focusing our government on meeting core priorities. Where we must make reductions, we do so wisely by giving local government the tools to save even more money than the overall reductions in state aid. As I've said before, our Constitution says the blessings of a free government can only be maintained by a firm adherence to justice, moderation, temperance, frugality, and virtue. This is the heart of our budget. We are returning to frugality and making the long-term decisions to balance our budget now and, more importantly, into the future.
Governor Scott Walker making his budget address in Madison on Tuesday. Dave Obey, the governor, says those budget cuts are necessary to put the state back on a sound financial footing. He says he campaigned on the issue, and he says he has given local governments, quote, the tools to balance their own budgets after they get the cuts in state aid. Those tools, of course, he's referring to are an end to most collective bargaining rights for teachers and other public workers. Your reaction to the governor's remarks and his overall budget?
Well, it just overall makes me sad because when we are in a crisis situation, I would hope that the chief executive and legislative leaders alike would be looking for ways to pull together rather than split the state apart. The fact is what the governor is proposing is largely unrelated to budget savings. It is clear that he has a personal and political agenda to really squeeze public employee unions. It's clear that he has his own non-budgetary agenda as well. Everybody understands you have to cut back spending at a time like this. But the fact is that he has made education a huge target in his budget. And I mean, when you say you're going to cut back the support for technical colleges by 30%, and then you say you're going to create jobs, does anybody really believe Wisconsin's economy is going to be strengthened by cutting state support for technical education? We ought to be expanding it greatly to give workers new skills.
Bob Williams, your reaction to the governor's budget address and his priorities?
Well, I personally wish that he had taken the collective bargaining and the dissecting of the UW system, or the dissolving of it. I wish he'd taken them out of the budget. I think the budget is a financial institution. I think these are partially, definitely financial, but they're so big and so hard to redo that they deserve special treatment one-on-one with the legislature, with himself, and with everybody. I'm reminded of that old saw, don't cut me, don't cut the, cut the man behind the tree. Everybody's looking for somebody else to cut their income from and their jobs from, and I think we've got, I agree with completely with Dave. It's time for us to act as adults, sit down, and make something happen.
Let's get your reaction to today's news. Today, the Republicans in the state Senate passed a resolution calling on police to take the 14 Democrats into custody. Good luck doing that, because they are in Illinois, but they have determined them to be in contempt of court. Dave Obey, aren't these 14 Democrats being paid to vote on the people's business, and who do they think they are to thwart the will of the majority?
Look, I have been talking to those senators ever since they made the decision to do what they did. And the fact is that what they did, they took the only step that was available to them to prevent the governor from unilaterally ripping up the Wisconsin tradition of cooperation between public workers and the state. I would point out that before collective bargaining rights were provided to state employees, teachers, for instance, had the right to strike. I remember when the WASA teachers engaged in a strike when my brother-in-law was head of the school board. It was a vicious fight, and they gave up the right to strike in return for having collective bargaining. Does anybody really think we'd be better off to go back to the old days of strikes in order to settle things?
Bob Williams, Senator Bob Jauch, a Democrat from Superior, says the Democratic 14 will not return as long as the Republicans are determined to eliminate what he views as a fundamental human right for public workers, the right to collective bargaining. And I've got a quote from Senator Jauch. He said, "I don't know if Wisconsin is becoming a banana republic or the Czech republic." So your response, are the state senators who issued the arrest resolution, are they simply good Republicans, or are they banana Republicans?
Well, I don't think they're really either at this time, and I don't think the Democrats are good Democrats. I think that this thing has gotten much bigger than the issue that they're talking about. And I get that as just touring and talking to people, like in my water therapy class at UW Stevens Point, for example. These are people that just don't understand how you can legislate from Illinois and stay and be there. And by the way, I differ on the languages. I think we're talking about collective bargaining, not rights, but privileges, because there are many states in this country that don't have collective bargaining rights. It's a privilege. I would like to see it maintained in some form or another, but I don't want to see it maintained with people 150 miles away yelling at each other.
The people in the Haymarket riots.
Can I make a point? I think some words that Bob just said are very important. He said he would like to see collective bargaining of some kind retained. I think that's the way to go about trying to deal with this problem. There clearly needs to be a compromise between the governor and the and the state senators, and you don't build an atmosphere for cooperation when you decide that you're going to fine people ex post facto $100 a day. You don't raise the temperature on these issues. You should be trying to sit down and work things out rather than escalating the rhetoric, which I think Senator Fitzgerald's action did today.
Bob, I want to follow up on this and get you both to comment a little bit further on this right versus privilege thing. Union members will tell you that people died for the right to bargain collectively. People died in the Haymarket Square in Chicago. They died fighting the copper bosses, and there were some pretty nasty fights involving state governments as well. Would people have died for a privilege instead of a right?
They died for a privilege, not a right. I maintain that. They call it a right, and that's their privilege to do so. Oops, I'm playing with words there. But anyway, I think we're in a semantic struggle. I only wanted to say the Constitution of the United States doesn't have it. And many states, unfortunately, most of them in the South, which are getting bigger and better industrially because they don't have it. But I just think that what we need is, and David is right, we need to start acting like adults at both ends, at the Capitol and down at the Clock Tower Inn near Rockford, Illinois, which, by the way, is a very nice place to run off to, where the 14 people have gone, as I understand.
They have a nice time museum there, if you've ever been there.
And, oh, they do?
Sometimes
bow ties? Do they have
sometimes
bow ties?
It seems, yeah, sometimes it seems like we're going back in time. Dave Obey, very quickly, if you could just weigh in on this, is collective bargaining, is that a right or a privilege?
Well, let me answer that by asking a question. If you are an individual worker in the private sector and you have to go to your employer in order to try to get a wage increase or get some help in paying your health insurance, how much of a chance do you think you have of getting that if you have a workforce of 800 people in the plant and you have to walk in alone and cut your own deal? I think the answer is you have virtually no leverage. The whole idea of collective bargaining is to allow workers to band together so that you have equals on either side of the bargaining table. And I think it's unfortunate that the governor is using legitimate concerns about the state budget in order to try to gut the ability of workers to bargain for their own working conditions, their own salary, and their own benefits. These public employees have already said that they are willing to give the governor what he is asking for by way of dollar concessions to help the budget. But what they are asking is that the governor cut a compromise which allows them to continue to have freedom of association in the workplace and gives them some bargaining agent in order to defend their interests. And to me, that is part of the moral underpinning of democracy and enlightened capitalism. I thought we were long past the era of robber baron capitalism where working members were expected to settle for table scraps. I thought that we reached a consensus in this country that the economy is stabilized when you have both sides of the bargaining table in a relatively even position. But the governor wants to take away all the marbles for the people with the least to bring to the table.
Reaction to another item in today's news. The state capitol has been, for all practical purposes, closed to the public all week. There's been some limited access despite a court order. Former Attorney General Peg Lautenschlager saying the Walker administration is not complying with that order. The Walker administration, of course, saying they do. Dave Obey, you tried to enter the Capitol building yesterday despite your 40 years in Congress, and was it 8 years in state government before that?
Six years.
You were denied entrance. Here's an audio portion of a video clip of that confrontation that's making the rounds on YouTube today.
How long have you guys been waiting here?
Over an hour.
At least half an hour?
Yeah, over an hour. General admission.
And have they told you why you can't get in? They're limiting the people in the Capitol to 100?
Yes.
Did you guys pay your taxes?
Absolutely.
You think you have a right to get in?
Absolutely.
I do too.
The Constitution says we do.
There is a court order, and the governor is not above the law. just as President Nixon found out, nobody is above the law. This building is ordered to be open, and it should be open.
I came here, tried to walk in. They told me I needed to get in line, that these folks have been waiting for over an hour. And my question is, why in hell have they been expected to wait an hour? This is their capital. It's not just the governor's capital. He's a temporary occupant of that building. He isn't a permanent king. And in my view, the Wisconsin taxpayers have a right to enter that building. They were never kept out when I served in the legislature.
Dave Obey, do you have anything to add to that?
Well, again, I just think it's sad. I was there in Madison yesterday because they were celebrating the 100th anniversary of the creation of the Joint Finance Committee. That committee has always symbolized the way that the legislature got together and resolved its budget differences between the Senate and the Assembly and both political parties. And I was really looking forward to see some old friends like Glenn Pomeraning, who was the Republican lead pony on budget issues when I was in the legislature. And so I went to the Capitol at about 1 o'clock and asked when I would be allowed in. And the response was they didn't know. I had to stand in line. And I said, well, you know, I don't mind standing in line, but it needs to be a real line. And why are they just having a pretense of allowing a few people in now and then? And I did not tell them initially who I was. I just wanted to see how a regular citizen would be treated. Then someone in the crowd told them who I was, and they said, well, maybe we can get someone down there to escort you in. And I said, I don't think that's legitimate. I'm not about to walk into the state capitol under Scott Walker's rules. I've been able to walk into that capitol for 52 years since I was a college student, never been blocked before. And also, I didn't see any reason why I should be allowed in if the taxpaying public who was standing around me wasn't allowed in either. I mean, those demonstrators have been extremely polite, extremely decent. Every national reporter covering that story has been amazed at how good-hearted they have been given the squeeze that they're under. And I just think it's a very, very sad day.
Bob Williams, Senator Glenn Grothman said some of those demonstrators, not all, but some of the protesters, the ones sleeping overnight, have been slobs. Your reaction?
I am frightened personally by this whole thing, because just before we went on, you were reading script there about live ammunition found today on the Capitol grounds, 22 bullets, many of them. How many was it? 40 or 50 they were talking
quite
about?
Quite a few.
If that's lying around and I'm in security, I'm a very, very nervous security man. And if they knew that this was escalating to that point, they wouldn't let Jesus Christ in to that. But David, I'll tell you one thing. You come down to Portage County and we will invite you into the Portage County courthouse.
Well, Bob, I appreciate the invitation, but I really believe that the governor's action in excluding these well-mannered taxpayers from the Capitol has again elevated the issue. We ought to be looking for any way to cool things off rather than escalate things. And I think, frankly, the problem is that the governor has some old grudges. He has been unhappy with the way he feels he's been manhandled by some of the public unions in Milwaukee County. And so now, even though the unions are willing to give him what he wants on the budget front, he still seems to be hell-bent to punish them for past slights by local leaders. I mean, my God, that was yesterday.
Dave,
today is today.
Dave,
we ought to be looking forward to trying to figure out how to solve this.
Dave, I've got to take a break. I'm way over. You're listening to former Democratic Congressman Dave Obey and Republican Bob Williams, a former aide to Governor Lee Dreyfus. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We'll be back with your calls after this.
Support for WPR comes from UMR, a United Healthcare company providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More at umr.com.
I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51. I'm going to try to squeeze in one of the phone calls that are waiting before the break. And Ken in the Wisconsin Dells has been waiting very patiently. Ken, you're on with Dave Obey and Bob Williams. Hello, Ken.
Hi. I had a question. I know that for the most part appears that like some of the major pharmaceuticals and health care providers are sitting back in glee while they're watching most of the public scratch it out like couple of cats with their tails tied together over a clothesline over health care benefits and that. But what I was really curious, if somebody could answer the question of why is health insurance and drugs so high? The pharmaceutical companies are the top lobbyists in Washington. It costs $1.50 to make 30 Neurontin pills, yet insurance is billed at $500 to the government.
Oh, Ken, we've got to get an answer from our guests. And, of course, health care benefits are a major portion of the costs that Scott Walker is trying to contain in the state of Wisconsin. Dave Obey, why does it cost so much to get insured?
Glenn, I could not hear the comments of the gentleman.
Why?
I knew I could hear somebody there, but I could not hear what he said.
Let me ask Bob Williams then. Bob, why does it cost so much to get health insurance and to get health care coverage?
Well, he was talking about drugs, and I know from my work with the Marshfield Clinic research people, development of drugs is terribly expensive. It years and years and millions of dollars to bring out one drug. That is one point that I think is overlooked as far as cost of health care. It goes back to the companies who manufacture the drugs. And it goes back to the doctors, the health. Healthcare is a wonderful thing to get into, I would recommend, but that's why the salaries and wages are the highest in that about any vocation you can get into. It's a very expensive process. That's where the costs lie, in people and in drugs.
Well, Glenn, if the caller was talking about drug costs, I would simply note that it's my understanding that Governor Walker's budget would put at risk Wisconsin's senior care program.
Hold that thought, Dave. Hold that thought, Dave. We're going to take a break for news, and we will be back with more as Route 51 continues on the Ideas Network. We are back on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio talking about Governor Scott Walker's budget address and the details in the budget plan, the budget repair bill, and the 14 Democrats who are still in Illinois, the Capitol, which for all practical purposes is still under lockdown, and our guest, Bob Williams, a veteran Portage County Republican activist of Idea Associates of Stevens Point, and former Democratic Congressman Dave Obey, who represented the 7th Congressional District for 40 years, more than 40 years. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is your show, and our phone number is 1-800-780-9742. We're going to go to the phones. We have Mark in Stevens Point. And, Mark, you're on Route 51. Hello, Mark.
Oh, hi. This is directed to Bob Williams, my friend here in Stevens Point. I just want to get his reaction to my comment. I'm distressed with Governor Walker's inflexibility and unwillingness to communicate with people he disagrees with. Bob, you and I knew Lee Dreyfus very well. I worked with him for many years, and Lee would never allow this type of confrontation to play out the way it is. He would get out there and talk with the protesters.
Bob,
I'll get off the phone now, and you can respond.
All right, Mark, thanks so much. Bob Williams, would former Republican Governor Lee Dreyfus be behaving the way the current Republican Governor Scott Walker is?
Well, of course not, because Lee was an actor as well as a governor, and he had a most marvelous sense of humor. He would have been out there having coffee with him or a beer across the street at the Congress or something like that.
Oh,
but he was... What?
Go on, Bob.
He was a different governor, a different person. Different people do things differently. And there's only one Lee Dreyfus, and it appears there's only one of our current governors.
Comparison between former Governor Lee Dreyfus and Scott Walker, both Republicans, Dave Obey.
Well, I cannot imagine Lee Dreyfus doing what Walker has done. I cannot imagine Warren Knowles doing this. I cannot imagine Tommy Thompson doing it. I cannot imagine Tony Earle doing it. I mean, this is just in a league of its own. I would like to make one other point on substance. I am alarmed at the huge attack on education that is taking place in this budget. The governor's budget calls for about $1.2 billion in reductions to education, and he says he has no choice. I went back and looked at the tax tables that existed when I was in the legislature 42 years ago versus the tax tables today. What I found is that the tax rates for the lowest income earners have been increased by almost 80%, and I found that the tax rates for people who make over $290,000 a year have been cut by 25%. If you simply raised the tax rates for people who make $290,000 a year to the same level that they were at back in 1968 or 69, you would raise $600 million during the biennium, and that would enable the governor to eliminate half of the hit on education that you find in his budget. So when he says he hates to do it, but there's no choice, there are other choices that can be made, especially when nationally the new CBS poll shows that only 3% of Americans think that education ought to be cut back substantially in order to balance budgets.
There's an NBC Wall Street Journal poll, and I want to share the statistics with both of you gentlemen. 77% nationally say public union members should have the same bargaining rights as private union members. By 49% to 22%, don't cut Social Security. By 54% to 18%, don't cut Medicare. By an 81% margin, most Americans say tax millionaires at a higher rate than you are now. 68% say eliminate the Bush tax cuts. 74% say eliminate tax breaks for oil companies. If the American people feel this way, why do they elect anti-tax people to government?
Well, I think that, as you know, if you take at elections, they've been reduced to a situation where you have these mindless 30-second ads, charge, countercharge, tossed up by both sides, and as a result, the average citizen has no way of figuring out who stands for what by the time he looks at these mom, pop, and apple pie TV ads that are run. But I just think again, we need if we're going to have shared sacrifice, I think that we ought to start by asking people who are the most well off to provide some sacrifice. Instead, we've seen $100 million tax cut for those people under very recent action by the governor.
But
so
Bob
there
Williams,
are a lot of choices that we have that can provide more equity and more fairness. And I repeat my question. Since we've already had the public employees agree to the dollar reductions in benefits that the governor is asking for, that means that the only thing you have left is whether or not they're going to have collective bargaining rights or not. And I would point out that in order to get those collective bargaining rights, teachers gave up the right to strike. And they weren't given that right for free. They gave up a major tool to influence their wages and working conditions. And now that trade-off is being blown up by somebody who was never there when that arrangement was bought into.
Dave, let's let Bob Williams react, first of all, to the idea of higher taxes. Are you willing to commit the ultimate unorthodoxy among Republicans and say maybe some taxes should be raised? Bob Williams.
I think you've presented another alternative. I don't think politically that's available to either side because the Democrats have not suggested it. But I want to compliment Dave. Earlier, he offered another idea of what should be done to meet the budget, particularly as it applies to the K-12 system. What my thought is, we can't be yelling at each other who can cut what from what. We have to present solutions. We have to have people come through and said, on the other hand, as Dave did, I would do it this way. And that's the only way that those people should come back from Rockford, Illinois, and the Clock Tower Inn, and they should get on the floor, and they could start doing what the legislature does. And what Dave did so well is chairman of the Appropriations Committee in the U.S. Congress. They took the president's budget, and they did things to it. Up and down, right and wrong, but they tried to adapt it to their constituencies. We're not having that. We're having them yelling, as I said, cut the man behind the tree. Come on, guys, come home. Let's do it. And let's, and by the way, I want to say, I want to go back to the pensions and the bargaining. Franklin D. Roosevelt, who I voted for, by the way, and Franklin D. Roosevelt said, there is no place for public employees, government people, to have collective bargaining. That's for the private sector. That was Franklin D. Roosevelt, 102 years ago, of course.
And about 20 years ago, Ronald Reagan in Poland said collective bargaining was a universal human right.
I disagree with him.
I'm going to do a rapid-fire round here, and I'm going to ask both of you gentlemen to respond in just a sentence, if you can. I know that's difficult for both of you, to specific items in this budget. And I want to ask you if you think it's a good idea or a bad idea. Is it a good idea to cut $900 million from local school districts and then keep them from raising property taxes to make up the difference? Bob Williams?
Well, I think that property taxes are a bigger issue than we've talked about. I'm glad you brought that up. I think that the property taxes are grossly unfair to put the school system on property taxes, particularly to very young couples with children, and particularly to older people like myself living in a home that they've lived in the same home for 54 years and seen the property tax go as high as it has.
Okay, Dave, good idea or bad idea?
Property taxes are the worst of all taxes, and that's why we have state aid formulas that send money back to local school districts so that you can relieve property taxes.
All right, here's the next one.
What the governor is doing is making sure that there will be a huge decline in the quality of education and that there will be many, many teachers laid off and some rural schools forced to close their doors.
All right, I knew I was going to have trouble with this. I've got like six more of these, so I'd like you to try to answer in one sentence each. Is it a good idea to eliminate the caps on the school voucher program, meaning that everyone's tax dollars might be spent to pay for rich kids going to private schools? Dave, good idea or bad idea?
I think our first obligation as public servants is to take care of public education. So I don't think we should be funding vouchers for private schools until you are providing adequate support for public education.
Bob Williams, removing those caps, good idea or bad idea?
I think charter schools should be extended because they are seeming to prove that they educate kids better than in the public schools. By the way, I think the public school system of the Milwaukee is the largest scandal that's ever hit the state of Wisconsin.
Is it a good idea to ban collective bargaining at the local level for transit workers, forcing the bus systems in Wausau and Stevens Point to shut down because they will be ineligible for federal aid? Good idea or bad idea, Bob Williams?
I think it's another debatable. I'm coming back to the idea of you're giving us choices. I think those all should be debated. I don't think it's a good idea.
Dave Obey?
I think it's a terrible idea. I mean, with what Wausau needs to have its transportation system so that low-income people can get around the community, and the governor's budget's going to make it harder for that to happen.
Is it a good idea to cut $250 million from the UW budget and then split UW-Madison from the other four-year and two-year schools? Bob Williams, good idea or bad idea?
It is an absolutely lousy idea to split the university system that my wife worked so hard 40 years ago as a regent to put together. I don't want to see it, and I'll be a happier husband with her in the house if that were taken out of the budget and debated as it should be on the floor of the Senate and the Assembly.
Dave Obey, you're a graduate of UW-Marathon County. Is that a good idea or a bad idea?
I think that it is a bad idea to, in a budget bill, propose that kind of proposal so that it does not get an adequate airing. It just that is a huge change, and I don't like to see us go back and try to refight old battles and reverse previous decisions. There ought to be some consistency in government.
Is it a good idea to end the Wisconsin Covenant program, which provided access to a university education for any high school student with good grades? Good idea or bad idea, Dave Olby?
I'm against anything that makes it harder for students of modest income to go to college. We already have, it's already much easier for people in wealthy families to send their kids to college than it is for other kids, and we cannot afford that, to waste those kids if we want to see Wisconsin's economy prosper.
Bob Williams, the Wisconsin Covenant.
It was the Covenant was an absolutely great idea. It should be retained, but then we got to find someplace else to cut, because we have a bottom line that we are a state that's poor and getting poorer.
Is it a good idea to cut $60 million in aid to cities and $36 million to counties and then keep them from raising property taxes to make up the difference? Bob Williams?
I think it's a good idea to do that, but I keep repeating myself. I think we have got to take these ideas and lay them out and find yeses and nos through a democratic process, and that's why I want both the university system and collective bargaining
taken out of the budget bill.
Yeah, out of the budget bill.
Dave Olby, good idea to cut all that aid to cities and counties and then keep them from raising property
taxes. If the governor wants to make dramatic changes in the budget, instead of tossing these things into the budget without consultation, he should pull people from both parties into a meeting, sit down with them and say, look, we want to make some major changes. What can we agree on a mutual basis, and what can't we agree on? That's the way you decide how to prioritize budgets and save money in one place so you can spend it in another.
All right, I got three more. Is it a good idea to cut $500 million from Medicaid by increasing copays and deductibles? Dave Olby?
I think it's a terrible social result. I just think that people have a right to basic health care. There may have to be some trims in Medicaid along with other budgets to get through this economic crunch. But, I mean, this is a draconian cut in health care benefits for people who can least afford it.
Bob Williams?
Well, then what are not draconian cuts? Different people with different views are going to call everything draconian. And you're right, Dave. You're right. This is a time to bring them back from Illinois, to bring them into the legislature, to bring them to have a little scotch and soda out at the governor's residence, and start doing serious talking, acting like adults, all of us. That's where I feel. We are not being adults, and we're being laughed at.
All right, gentlemen, I have two more. Is it a good idea to give the governor the authority to sell the state's power plants without putting them up for bidding? Dave Olby?
I don't believe in untrammeled executive power, whether it's being given to the president or the governor or a mayor. I don't trust unilateral power like that.
Bob Williams?
I don't like government running power plants. I think they should have long ago gone to a private sector, which has learned for 150 years how to run power plants, whether they be wood-fired or nuclear-powered or whatever. It's not for government to do anyway.
Finally, is it a good idea to stop state funding to local governments for recycling and to allow local governments to stop recycling programs? Dave Olby?
Well, I think you ought to ask Tommy Thompson that. He's the fellow who started it, and I think Tommy would tell you that's not a good idea to can it.
Bob Williams?
I kind of would like it, can it, not to carry that stuff down every Friday night to be picked up, or Thursday night to be picked up. But I like it, and I'm one of them would say, no, don't cut that out. But on the other hand, here's what you should cut, and I would have my opinion on that one. Cut something else behind that tree. That's what we got to do.
Bob Williams, Republican from Portage County, former Democratic Congressman Dave Olby. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We'll be back with your phone calls after this.
The businesses, professionals, and organizations that support Wisconsin Public Radio's programming play an important part in our financial health. When you visit a WPR sponsor, please let them know that you appreciate their support of this station. Thanks very much.
Republican Bob Williams, Democrat Dave Olby, and your phone calls at 1-800-780-9742. Let's go to Ed in Wausau, who's been waiting patiently. Ed, you're on Route 51.
Hi. Thank you for the program. I always have been a Democrat, and I was recruited to Wausau when both a Catholic hospital and Lutheran hospital went broke, and they merged. And that was like 36 years ago now. But I had an opportunity to meet Dave when he came out with his book, and I showed him a picture that I took of President Harry Truman when he was on a plane that I was on. I was at Brooke Army Medical. I was a U.S. Army medic, and Harry was attending the funeral of the Speaker of the House, Sam Rayburn.
Right.
I've been a product of the University of Wisconsin system, both Madison and Whitewater. I got a degree. I didn't realize the governor he was a college dropout. My daughter, I was prejudiced towards the University of Wisconsin, and I... to keep the story short...
Yeah, we're running out of time.
She decided to go to Minnesota, she became a special ed teacher and teaches in the Twin Cities. And I had her watch the Democracy Now! Program on Amy Goodman's
program. Ed, you gotta give me a question.
But on that program, my daughter called me back. Both her and her husband saw that program, and she's going to see Governor Mark Dayton. Plenty left Dayton with a $6.2 billion debt. And
Ed, I need a question from you.
To make a story quick, essentially, she's going to have him put a sign, "Escape from Wisconsin," on the road coming over on the Hudson La Crosse bridges.
Okay, thank you very much, Ed, for your comment. And let's get a quick reaction to that from Bob Williams.
I don't want to escape from Wisconsin. I want to stay here and help them solve their problem. I would like to use this moment to go back to David Obey earlier. We both probably know you didn't, Dave, you're too young, voted for Franklin D. Roosevelt. Franklin D. Roosevelt could be told what he could do at any time by the Secret Service. I am not sure that our governor today that he told you to stay out, or told anybody to stay out of the Capitol. The Secret Service people have the right to tell the president where he can go and can't. Perhaps the service people there had the right to take you and me and tell us we can't go in. I don't know if it was the governor that did that.
Dave Obey?
Well, I think it's very obvious that the governor decided that he wanted to shut down those demonstrations. He's dropping like a rock in the public opinion polls, and those crowds are one of the reasons. And I have no doubt whatsoever that he and his Department of Administration just decided that they were going to throttle those demonstrators. There are many ways to bring order out of chaos. The governor has chosen absolutely the most inflammatory way, and I just think it's very unfortunate.
Those recent opinion polls say that if the election were held today, Tom Barrett would beat Scott Walker 52-45%. People are evenly divided on the question of whether Governor Walker should be recalled. Right now we have 8 Republicans and I think 6 Democrats who are the subject of recall petitions. Is Scott Walker ruining the Republican brand in this state, Bob Williams?
I have been in, I think, 27 campaigns, and I've never paid a cent for a poll. That's the way I feel about public opinion polls. They are that old snapshot of a moment. I wouldn't want to legislate anything today on public opinion polls, because the poll I have in Stevens Point, talking to people that I know of all ages and all sizes, they don't just like the chaos they see, and they want to see order brought to chaos. And so, I just disagree with the polls.
Dave Obey, you've got the final word here.
I don't think you can govern by polls, but I think, what you have to ask is has the governor tried to bring the state together to take on these gargantuan problems, or has he used this this opportunity or misused it in order to divide people in the state and inflame the situation? I think overwhelmingly people understand he's done the other. I think he could still salvage something if he would take a more conciliatory position. He ought to take a yes for an answer from the public employees who've already agreed to the budget cuts he's demanded, and he ought to respect them as human beings and respect the fact that they gave up a huge tool in their toolbox when they gave up strikes in return for having the right to bargain collectively.
All right, gentlemen, thank you so much. I'm going to ask both of you real quickly. We've got about 30 seconds. Do you think we will see any recall elections in the state, either for state senators or for the governor in another year? Bob Williams?
I hope not. I do not believe in recalls. I believe the next recall is in 2012, and there will be many legislators that are up for grabs. And I don't see a recall as probably ever coming in the state.
Dave Obey, real quick.
I think it's extremely important that the governor has allowed this to get to that point. The Republicans started the effort to recall people like Jim Holprin, and now they're getting a taste of their own medicine. This state is in danger of spiraling downward on issues like this unless you have some conciliatory positions taken by the governor.
All right, we got it.
And I'm sure that those state senators in Illinois are interested in finding any way to achieve an honorable compromise.
Dave, we've got to leave it at that. Thank you so much, former Congressman Dave Obey. And Republican activist Bob Williams of Idea Associates, a former aide to Republican governor and UWSP Chancellor Lee Dreyfus. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Jacob Clotty. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. That's it for us. Thanks for riding along with us today. Until next week, we're heading out of town.